Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tzvi Hirschfield. I'm sitting in the Pardes Institute in Jerusalem, and we are about to continue our discussion of the third parak of Rosh Hashanah of Gemara. We are starting out from the very bottom, the last line of 26a, Chafav Amud Aleph, and we are going to continue through Chafav Amud Bet 26b. We are coming in a context where rabbis are talking about how they traveled the world to learn the meanings of Hebrew words connected to foreign language words, and now we're continuing with the story of a rabbi who did not know what a word meant. Levi ikla bahu atra, the Amora Levi, came to a certain town. Ata gavra lakame, a person came in front of him. Amarle and said to him, kiva'an palnya. Ploni, this certain man, kiva'aned me. And you'll see why I'm not translating that word in a moment. Lo havayada, my kamarle. Levi did not know what this man meant by kiva'an. What was he saying to him? Ata she'il bei midrasha, he came to ask in the Beit Midrash. Amarle, someone said to him, Gazalan amarlach. He was telling you the man was a thief. Kava'an means gazlan. He stole from you. Dichtiv hayikba adam Elohim. He quoted the verse from Malachi, which comes in a context where the Jewish people are being accused of not bringing maaser, not bringing the tithe, and they are stealing from God. Amarle rava mi barnish the Rav Ashi. Rava of Barnish said to Rav Ashi, Iha vayhatam hava menale. Hechi kava'ach, v'amai kava'ach, v'amai kava'ach. If I was there, I simply would have asked him, how did this man kava'ah to you? And with what? And where? Umimela havayadina. And I would have known from context, I would have known what was meant by the term. Presumably, he said, you know, he felt embarrassed. He wouldn't have embarrassed himself by going to the Beit Midrash and asking the question and finding out it's a pasuk from Nach. The Ihu Savar, Levi ever held, Milta de Isura Kamarle. He thought he was telling about something, a prohibited action, and therefore did not want to start exploring the details with him, perhaps embarrassing him or the other guy or himself. Lohavu Yada Rabbanan Mai Serugin, another story. The Chachamim, the Tami, did not know what the word Serugin meant, which appears in the Mishnah, like in Tractate Megillah, and talks about reading the Megillah, the Serugin. Shema'uha la'amta debe rebi dechazatnehu rabbanan dehavu ailei piske piske. And then once they overheard the maidservant in the house of Rebbe, who when she saw the scholars were coming in sort of groups, little groups at a time, not all at once, but they were coming in drips and drabs, Amar lahu, she said to them, Ad matai atem nichasin serugin serugin. How long are you guys going to continue coming in small groups? And therefore, they learned from her what the word serugin meant. Lo havu yadi rabbanan mai chalog logot. The scholars also didn't know what the word chalog logot, which also appears in the Mishnah, in Yoma. It was a certain type of plant that the Kohen Gadol would not eat because it would make him drowsy. Yoma chad shmu ha la'amta debe rabbi dechazit lahu gavra deka mevadar par pachine. And then one day they overheard the maidservant in the house of Rebbe who saw a certain man who was scattering these flower petals. Amara lay, she said to him, Ad matai ata mefazer chalug logcha. How long can you continue scattering your chalug logot? And that's how they learned that chalug logot were in fact parpachim. And they learned the term. Lo havu yadi rabbanan mai salsalea trumeka. The scholars also did not know what the word salsala meant. It comes in the word, it appears in Mishlei. Salsala it, and it will uplift you. Yom achad shma'uha la'amtad be'rabi, dehavat amara lahugavra, dehavakame hapech besa'arei. And then one day, they overheard the maidservant of in Rebbe's house, said to a certain man who was kind of overturning his hair or playing with his hair or twisting his hair. Amarale, she said to him, Ad matai atam misalsel bisarecha. How long are you going to continue being misalsel, curling or turning your hair? One more. Lo havu yadei rabbanan mai v'tetatiha b'mitate hashmad. What does the word mitate or tetia mean? And it's a verse, in this case, it's a verse from Yeshayahu, Yodalah, talking about destruction. Yom echad shma'u ha'amta devei rabbi dehavat amra lechavirta shekoli tateti v'tati beta. One day they overheard the maids from the house of Rebbe say to her partner or friend, take your tateta, which is your broom, and tati beta, and sweep the house. So in all of these instances, fascinatingly enough, it is a maidservant in the house of Rebbe that teaches Torah to the Chachamim. They didn't know what these words meant, and she knew them, and she is seen to be deliberately using them, indicating either she has some scholarly background, or by living in the house of Rebbe, she had a scholarly background. But it's a beautiful example, I think, of sort of, you finally get at least a hint of scholars sort of engaging and learning from people who did not belong to the elite scholarly class. So in a way, it's a very exciting piece. It fits well with the mission of Kol HaShofarot Kshirim, right? All shofarot are kosher. And maybe this is like an allusion to everybody's kosher. Everybody has something to teach. Everybody has value. Okay, a couple more examples before we get to the next Mishnah. Yom Achad Shmu'uha, Lo Haviyadei Rabbanan, my Hashlech al Hashem Yahavcha v'hu Yechal Kalecha. They also did not know what Yahavcha meant. In the verse that says, pour yourself out or throw yourself upon Hashem, your Yahavcha, and he will sustain you. It's a verse from Tehillim Nun Hei. Amra Varchana, Yom Achad Have Azlina Bahari Hutaya, right? One day I was traveling along the road with a certain Arabic person, Have Darina Tuna, and he was carrying a load. The Amarli, he said to me, Shekol Yahavich Ushte Agamlai, take your load and throw it onto my camel, meaning Yahevcha is your burden or your load. So once again, an example of someone not from the elite scholarly class, not even Jewish, who is able to teach a great scholar about what a word in Sefer Tehillim means. Okay, we're now going to go on ahead to the new Mishnah on 26b, Chavvav Amud Bet. Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah Shel Ya'el. The shofar of a Rosh Hashanah should come from a Ya'el. Now, a Ya'el is either translated as an ibex. The Aruch says it's actually a ewe, a female sheep, but most agree that it's some type of ibex or wild deer of some kind, both a horn that is hollow, full of cartilage, not solid bone all the way through. In addition, it's pashut ufiv mitzupeh zahav. It's straight, and they would sort of cover the mouthpiece or the mouth of the horn with gold. We're in a context of talking about blowing shofar in the mikdash, by the way. Ushtei chatzotzot min hatzadin, and there were two horns that would stand, horn blowers, and with horns stand on either side of the shofar blower. Shofar ma'arich v'chatzotzot mikatzrot shemitzvat hayom b'shofar. The shofar blowing would, each note would go longer. The horn blower would go short because the midst of the day is the shofar. So even though you had the horns accompanying the shofar, there would be a period of time where only the shofar blast was sounded on its own. So because that was the midst of the day to hear the shofar blast. Uvetaniot, and on fast days where we know the Kohanim used to blow shofarot or chatzotzrot, kfufin, ufihen mitzupeh kesef. They were curved shofarot, and their mouths were covered with silver. Ushtei chatzotzrot be'emtza, and the two horns were in the middle. Shofar mikatzer v'chatzotzrot ma'arichot shmitzvat hayom v'chatzotzrot. And in this instance, the shofar would shorten its blowing, and the chatzotzrot, the horns, would go longer, because the mitzvah of the day was with chatzotzrot, and therefore they got to be on their own. Shaveh ha-yovel l'Rosh Hashanah l'tkia v'l'brachot. Right, the yovel year, every 50 years on Yom Kippur, you would have to blow shofar to let everybody know about the yovel year and the freeing of all the slaves and all the land going back to their original owners. And here, the Mishnah is saying on that, on a yovel year of Yom Kippur, you have to blow shofar, and you also have the same 9 blessings that you do on Rosh Hashanah as part of your Musaf. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'Rosh Hashanah tok'in b'shel zacharim uv'yovlot b'shel ye'elim. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and disagrees with the Tanakhama, and he says on Rosh Hashanah we would use Zicharim, which means ram's horns, and on Yovlot we would use Ye'elim. So what we end up with here is the Tanna Kamma believed Rosh Hashanah you used a Ye'el, which was Pashut, straight, and that's the ibex horn, and on Yom Kippur of the Yovel you would use a bent ram's horn. And I'm sorry, the Yovel you would also use a Ye'el Pashut. And the Tanit, presumably, you would use the bent ram's horn. Rabbi Yehuda, however, held that on Rosh Hashanah, you use the bent ram's horn. On Yovel and Yom Kippur, or the Yovel of Yom Kippur, you would use the Ya'el, the Pashut, the straight one. And then a Tanit, we have a debate, because he doesn't say so in the Mishnah, where the Ran says he would use a ram's horn according to Rabbi Yehuda, and according to the Ritva, he would use a Pashut. Now we have an interesting question here as to how this Mishnah relates to the first one that we did, the earlier one, because the earlier one said all shofarot are kosher, and this one seems to specify and say no, shofar shel Rosh Hashanah needs a Ya'el, is a Pashut one according to the Tanna Kamma, or is a bent ram's horn according to Rabbi Yehuda. But it doesn't sound like you can use any one that you want. So there's a debate. The Rambam indeed believes that this Mishnah is arguing on the earlier one, and he paskened like Rabbi Yehuda, so he believed on Rosh Hashanah you had to use a curvy ram's horn. However, most other Rishonim believe that it's not arguing, it's just saying what's preferred, what's better. Mitzvah min ha-mufchar, that really any shofar is kosher. Preferably, however, there's a debate whether you should use a ram's horn or an ibex horn. And we'll talk about more about what that debate might be about in a minute. So now going on in our Gemara, we find the following. Amar Rabbi Levi. Levi said, Mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah v'shel Yom HaKippurim b'kfufin v'shel Kol HaShanah b'pshutin. So he held that Rosh Hashanah, you should use the bent ram's horn, and Yom Kippur and Yovel, you should also use the ram's horn, and then any other time during the year, presumably a Tanit or anything else, you should certainly use the straight, the Ya'el, horn. The Hatnan, the Gemara asked a question on him from the Mishnah. Shofar Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'el Pashut, but the Mishnah said Rosh Hashanah should be with a Ya'el, a straight horn, a Pashut horn. Hu da'amar ki haitana. No, that's not true, because it's not a question at least, because Levi held like the following Tana. Tanya, we learn a brighter, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Barosh Hashanah hayu tokim b'shel zcharim fufin uvivyovlot b'shel ye'elim. That he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who actually believed that Rosh Hashanah you do use the ram's horn, and on Yom Kippur, at Rosh Hashanah you use the ram's horn, and in the Yovel you use the straight Ya'el horn. The Lema Hilchatuk Rabbi Yehuda, if that's true, then why didn't Rabbi Levi just say, I follow the halachas like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah? Why did he quote his statement on his own? So here the Gemara answers, E Amrat Hilchatuk Rabbi Yehuda, if he had said the halacha follows like Rabbi Yehuda, Hava Amina Afilu Shel Yovel Nami Rabbi Yehuda Sirale. We would have thought that he agreed with Rabbi Yehuda about the Yom Kippur of Yovel, that you use a Ya'el Pashut horn. Kamash Malan, no. He believed, it seems to be his own opinion, that he paskened like Rabbi Yehuda for Rosh Hashanah and said you have to use the bent ram's horn, but he indeed followed the Tanna Kamma that you use a Ya'el Pashut, the straight horn, for Yom Kippur of Yovel. Now the Gemara is going to turn back to understand what are they really arguing about? Why is it? Where does this idea of a preference for one day having a straight horn and the other day having a curved horn? B'mai kamifalge, what in fact is the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda, what are they arguing about? Mar savar b'Rosh Hashanah kama dekaif inish date tfei male uvi yom kippurim kama depashit inish date tfei male. Right, the first opinion of the says that on Rosh Hashanah, this is referring to Rabbi Yehuda, that on Rosh Hashanah, ideally a person should be kafuf, they should be bent over. The more the better, the more it's about humility and submission. And on Yom Kippur of Yovel, and since it's on Yom Kippur you blow, then you should have something straight. And the other, Mar Savar Rosh Hashanah Kama De Pashit Inish Date Tfe Male, that the other opinion, the Tanakhama says, no, Rosh Hashanah, it should be Pashut, it should be straight. And Taniot, and on a Tanit, is when we want you to be bent and submissive. And it's a very interesting idea. There's sort of two postures, literally, reflected in the shape of the shofar between Pashut and Kafuf, where the Pashut, the straight shofar, seems to indicate this idea of integrity, freedom, because it connects to the freedom of the Yovel year, about the freeing of slaves and the land being freed and going back to its owner. There's a sense of uprightness and simplicity. But I also think the Pashut model, also about standing straight before God, meaning you're standing upright with integrity, and you're also, that the prayer is a moment of connection and relationship. Here I am ready to meet God. And the Kafuf model, the bent model, sends a different message. It's literally a different posture. It's about humility and subjugation and acknowledging God's kingship. And I think what you really have there in some ways are really two models of thinking about the prayer experience with God, particularly on the Yamim Noraim, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And one is sort of this, the individual moment of relationship. Here, God, this is who I am. Simple, straightforward, stripped down, no pretense, ready to engage you. And that's the Pashut model. And the Kafuf model is, God, all I can do is bow before you, accept your authority, acknowledge your kingship, and humble myself before you. And I think these are two, both important, but in some ways distinct ways of relating to God. And they are reflected in the use of the shofar, in as the blowing of the shofar seems to represent a type of posture or way of engaging God or presenting ourselves before God.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty. And thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning. And visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.